suppose I should start with a very small anecdote. In 2007, the Irish News ran a cartoon. They're very good at doing this at opportune moments, of paramilitaries that had UDA tattoos and UVF tattoos, one of whom was on a stretcher, and he had been injured by a flying book, and the book was on conflict transformation. And the suggestion being, of course, there's more than one book on conflict transformation. I think John Paul Lederach would be appalled if he found out that it was actually his book. It's the one, it's a go-to book. I have a copy in my bag about building peace being used as a tool of war, however. The anecdote, I think, expressed an irreverence about the terminology that was being used at that particular time by loyalists and by others, by people in the government who were keen then, New Labour government, to indulge in what can only be described as managerial speak. As my learned comrade on the right here, Joe, might describe it, bollocksology, as a justification for portioning funds for several initiatives. Now, at that time, the minister was Margaret Ritchie, and of course she stopped the funding for a UDA-linked initiative. And I suppose there was a certain amount of scepticism about it. I think that that was rightly justified, in the sense that no one, not even academics, had come out and tried to conceptualise what was meant by conflict transformation. And I'll preface that, I'll give you a caveat on that, which is that the only people to do that at the time were consultants for hire, people who made quite a lot of money out of beefing up reports on these initiatives, saying that they were all singing, all dancing, brilliant. They were transforming the mindsets, they were doing this, they were doing that. And so what I'm going to do is just try and set out for you where that has gone wrong. There's been a disconnection in the past 20 years, never mind the past 10 or 5, about the idea of conflict transformation. So what I'm going to do is revisit a practical example and outline why that went wrong and why communities in loyalist areas, if you want to call them that, are still having to deal with the presence of paramilitary organisations. You know, because the truth is that these groupings still exist, and the reason why they exist is because there has not been an effective disarmament, demobilisation, reintegration strategy pursued by anyone except by those groups themselves. So I think that it would be easy for me to just sit here and criticise those groups for having done half a job, but the reality is that no one wants to take responsibility for this at all. Not in government, not in civil society, especially not in civil society. And I think that we should. And my answer to this, because I've called it the unfinished business of the peace process, is to outline what a whole of community approach would look like. And that's everybody taking responsibility at all levels, not just prods, not just nationalist Republicans, I mean everybody, from the government, from the top down. So let me just start by talking about progressive loyalism. What I mean by that term, well, it's those who would be associated with the Progressive Unionist Party, the UVF, and the Red Hand Commando. I'm being very specific, I'm not going to talk about the UDA, even though I opened my remarks with by mentioning them. And so it's a very focused case study. And the reason why is because the PUP, more than any other group, especially the PUP, have talked about conflict transformation. This is a document that I found a couple of weeks ago. I hadn't seen it in a long time. It's Progressive Unionist Party's opening statement to the British government in the bilateral talks of the 15th of December 1994. 20 years ago, 1994. And at the bottom of page one it says, "We are committed to the transformation of the conflict which has so damaged our community. There's little hope, at least in the short term, of resolving the conflict." Okay, right. Bearing in mind But if you study conflict transformation and peace building, you will be familiar with the difference between conflict transformation and conflict resolution. The reality being, for people, even for John Paul Lederach, who has probably written more about this than anyone else, in the international sense, conflict can't be resolved. It's just, it happens, and we have to deal with it. What we can do, Lederach tells us, is to transform those relationships between human beings, between communities, in an identity politics conflict, a conflict over identity politics. You can transform that into a more peaceful set of relationships so that they don't turn to the gun and the bomb, but they turn to peace and development. Okay. This document talks about all sorts of socioeconomic issues. It talks about legacy issues in 1984. Okay. It also states quite clearly at the top, second page, the implacable opposites of nationalism and unionism are irreconcilable. However, we believe that movement by all to the legitimate political arena can create the transformation from armed conflict to dialogue. So, there's the evidence. It's been around for a long time. Fingerprints of one individual, Billy Mitchell, are all over this, but you know, Billy Hutchison was involved in producing this documentation as well. I think that sometimes we forget that. I mean, Billy Hutchison has been around a very long time, involved in this sort of thing, thinking about it and talking about it. And it's as if when you read some of the spurious commentary about people, you know, and I would say all political leaders do get their fair share of spurious commentary. Gerry Adams would attest to that, I'm sure. But we seem to think that Billy Hutchison is not the man that he used to be, or he's a different person. I think he's exactly the same person he's always been. I think that for those who say, well, how can you talk about conflict transformation when he's talking about flags? I think that this is all part of the same thing. I think that the legacy of the conflict, the symptoms such as the flag protest and other things, by the way, there are other things going on out there, are all part of the same problem here that we have just not dealt with. No one has taken responsibility of this at all. How am I doing for time, Paddy?
Halfway?
Right, great. Okay. So, what's the evidence for saying, well, things are not great at the moment in the peace process? I think if we look at Paul Nolan's report, which is mentioned in the synopsis for the symposium, it's pretty obvious that he's painting a very complex picture with a lot of statistics. Very good piece of work, mostly. But I think that if you read the two sections on paramilitarism, one on loyalist paramilitarism and one on dissident Republican activity, you'll come away thinking that loyalists are a bigger threat to the peace process than dissident Republicans. Well, that's frankly a little bit alarming. I think that some of the buzzwords that come out of the report, such as the flag protests have led to, quote, a revival of their loyalist paramilitary fortunes and the attainment of a new respectability. I think that what we have in that report is beginning of a process of a critique of the peace process, but one that's relatively benign and harmless at the end of the day, because it doesn't go beyond its analysis of loyalist paramilitarism. Apart from saying there's a benign narrative, using words that I used to describe the report, but anyway, a benign narrative presented the loyalist leadership shepherding their followers into community development activities, often in partnership with Republican former prisoners, and saying that's a good thing. And on the other hand, the report outlines how some of these initiatives really are not very worthy. So there's two schools of thought on this. Either they're not doing enough, or they're doing just about the right amount. Academics have been writing about this, but I think academics have been talking to one another instead of talking to the wider community. Jim McCauley, Roy Garland, Carolyn Gallagher, Pete Sherlow, Graham Spencer have all written about this. Tony Novosel, and soon you'll see some work from Richard Reid and Gareth Bovena. And I think that that way of understanding Loyalism has been debated at length. But I think we need to go further than that. We need to ask, what is it about these groups that they are still, why are they still in existence? That's the bottom line. That's the one overarching question I want to turn to in my last few minutes. And I think they're in existence because particularly UVF is in existence because the message did not get out to the rank and file. You had a leadership bought into this notion of conflict transformation, and that was fleshed out by Billy Mitchell, famously in his so-called road shows way back 10 years ago, and unfortunately he died in 2006, and that left a lot of the work undone. He also was responsible for the East Antrim Conflict Transformation Forum, which was about trying to pull everybody in the community, the wider community, academia, faith-based groups, and so on, together to try and resolve the legacy of the conflict. And that was to run alongside and complement the internal consultation process that was being run by the UVF at that time. And it's covered in detail by Barney Rowan. So if you want to Google it, you'll get all the information, probably through the pages of Belfast Telegraph. So essentially, the two processes were complementary. But what the wider one, the one that engaged an entire wave of loyalist opinion in Northern Ireland, was about, was actually trying to say to paramilitary groups, there is no need for you anymore. The police can take over. You know, there's no need to run informal justice in your communities, and we have other organisations like Alternatives that can plug the gap. But for some reason, and I think that it came down to the death not only of Billy Mitchell but of David Irvine and others, that message just did not get through. So in 2007, some token of that aborted conflict transformation forum or process was a statement by the UVF that said we will put our weapons beyond reach. Didn't go any further. That came in 2009. In 2007, you had another organisation formed called Action for Community Transformation, which is still ongoing, but has one worker, I believe, in place. They have had to deal with piecemeal funding for a long time. They've been doing, and the individual responsible for that has been doing basically a voluntary job in trying to transform an organisation that has several thousand members, several thousand people who are still in the UVF, to try and transform them to give them other options. So what I'm saying, I started off by talking about how we're not serious about this. Thank you. If we were serious, then those sorts of activities would be more joined up, and they would apply equally in Republican communities as well. And so I don't think we really are serious about conflict transformation here. That's not because we haven't read the work of the great John Paul Lederach. I just think that we haven't given much thought to how long this process is likely to take. John Paul Lederach remarks in his book that in the 90s, I think it was in the 90s, he was almost thrown out of a conference for just suggesting that it would take just as long to get out of the conflict as it did to get into it. But I think that some of the comments that he has made, I think, are equally as relevant. But also, if we were to take it a step further and really articulate a sort of strategic vision about how we could dismantle some of these groups and demobilise them and reintegrate them, then there needs to be an engagement with the ideas of the policy community at an international level. So that would be my twofold, penny for my thoughts, twofold response would be to try a whole of community approach, but also one that borrows from good practice, best practice undertaken by the United Nations and other groups. We've left it to indigenous armed groupings here to do it for themselves. And in the Good Friday Agreement, the only mention of this is about people using their influence. There we go, Pally, right on time. Using their influence to try and dissuade them from that path of militancy. Unfortunately, that hasn't worked. So I think that efforts need to be stepped up.
Great.